you coming back in here with ducking jumpsies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jumpsies.
Look at anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
How's the form? Welcome to the Balls at AGA podcast, the three-man meave. Morris Brosnan here with you. I'm joined, as usual, by Nick McCarthy.
Oh, I got the first in this week, Mark. Sorry about that.
And Mark Farley is here as well.
Hi there.
I feel like I didn't make the most of it.
No, you absolutely blew it.
Yeah. I'll be back. I'll be sacked. I'll be off the show next week now, I'd say. That's my prediction.
You'll be
dropped for that.
Yeah.
A poor start. It'll leave you behind. As Claire might find out all too soon.
Ah, now, come on. Dig upon dig. Last Thursday night down in Cork, everybody just having... At least I was happy when they were having digs at Clare. Most of the time they were ignoring them and forgetting they existed
this
altogether.
This is our Sports Direct event.
Yeah.
With a couple of monster GA heads who seemed to forget that Clare had a hurling team.
Oh, absolutely. It's a four-team competition in Munster this year with three getting out. And God only knows who those three could be, but it definitely won't be Clare anyway.
It's a cracking weekend, the GA, and this is kind of going to be a comprehensive show in lieu of that. So we're going to hear from that Clubhouse live event with Sports Direct that we just referenced there. So that's Lara Corbett, Derek McGrath and Shawnee McGrath run the roost over the legitimate challengers for Munster. And it's also a big weekend of Gaelic football. We're going to chat about that. We're going to hear from Patrick O'Connor, who's the Wicklow footballer, about kind of an interesting enough dynamic there with a couple of Dublin footballers coming down there. But there's only one place to start, lads. Because... last night, Liverpool bet Barcelona. I don't know if people listening to this podcast might have known that. But the man of the match in the game was obviously the ball boy who threw the ball to Trent Alexander-Arnold and what that spawned. And what that reminded me of straight away was of Ronan Gallagher for Fermanagh standing behind the goals and throwing balls after the goalkeeper.
That rule's been... Wasn't the rule brought in that you're not allowed to do that anymore?
There was. So it's funny, right? I was thinking about this, about the influence that these kind of really subtle elements have within the game and why they're so important. So say, for example, Jamie Wall was on Twitter earlier today and he was talking about that footage actually. He said, just a point on this in relation to a game I have a bit of a clue about. When you watch Limerick in particular, every time they win a free or a line ball, Galan or Donovan are hitting either in the scoring range, but the nearest player always stands over to try and find the dope. So it's this kind of thing about trying to see...
Find
somebody
the dope, as Graham Souness said on Virgin Media.
Exactly, yeah. So trying to... maybe get a quick one, and I think it's something that we're only going to see more and more in the game. So say for example you look at what Waterford did with their line ball against Galway, just that quick tap, and it was kind of a bit of creativity about getting something going quickly.
Yeah.
Or even Mick, we spoke on the podcast last year about Roscommon Galway, and remember Tom Parsons on the Sunday game that night after the game in the Conn Championship, and he was showing that Roscommon never kicked the ball short despite the fact that they were cleaned out around the middle. And then when you watch the game back, Lavin, who was the goalkeeper, the reason he was never kicking short is because they didn't have an option, because he didn't have a ball beside his goal, so he's running 20 yards every time to get a ball and bring it back and then kick it out. But it's like it's a 1% thing that could have
Don't forget the time when the Clare selector slung the bag of snitters over from the Cork goal over into the terrace. That caused another storm. And look, I think it is. It does illustrate this point, though. Like, I mean, that was a massive disadvantage for Nash that day, of for those few minutes not having the balls to hand like that. You see that. You see hurling in particular. You see the keepers going for the bag of slitters before the ball's even over the bar. You know, because how else are you supposed to do it?
I think that really throws teams off as well. I suppose that's the other side of it too, that you can kind of mess with an opposition team, or if we used to throw away goalkeepers' tees when I was playing full forward just to annoy your goalkeeper and stuff like that. But it's all kind of it's all trivial stuff in a sense, but it leads to, as you see last night, it can have like a massive impact in the end.
Also, just on that Liverpool ball boy, his name deserves a mention. It's Oakley Cannoneer, which is one of the best names I've ever heard. Particularly for ball boys. Perhaps the only name I've ever heard for a ball boy. But I don't want to hear any more.
Turns out that Arnold was a ball boy. He was there for the Liverpool Chelsea.
Ball boy, when Gerrard slipped. Yeah.
That's for a different podcast. Football, lads, it's back, finally. Not that we get to watch any of it, unfortunately. Just to run through the cricket before we go through it. Leinster, Wicklow versus Kildare playing on Saturday. You've also got Tipperary and Limerick and Clare and Waterford in the Munster game. Then going over to Sunday, Connacht's quarter-final. Roscommon are playing Leitrim. In the first round of Leinster, you've got Wexford against Loud, an interesting game there. Meath in Offaly and Tyrone Derry up in Ulster in the preliminary round qualifier. Start off, I suppose, if we kick things off on Saturday, Wicklow Kildare, a game that I actually think would be more intrigued about this than a lot of other people are, because A, you've got this Kildare dynamic, which is that they're missing basically the three of their, I think, arguably most important players in Daniel Finn, Kevin Flynn, and Owen Doyle. Like, if you were to identify a loss, that's probably that. Then you've also got the idea about something we spoke on this podcast before, which is Wicklow all of a sudden having a load of Dublin influence and the likes of David Devereaux and Oisín Manning playing at wing half forward and cornerback respectively. We might actually hear it, but this is Patrick O'Connor speaking to us last month just about what those two boys have brought and the influence they're going to have now.
Yeah, I suppose the team being so young, we kind of just get everyone together, and then we've trained 3 or 4 years to just gel perfectly together and get a proper system and that going. So I suppose kind of this year we were kind of only gelling together. We've even knew two lads in from Dublin that joined us. So I suppose we were kind of getting to know each other more so, because there was so much new lads on the panel this year. So hopefully now next year we'll have everyone, and let's say promotion will be the big goal then again next year.
Who joined you from Dublin again?
David Devereaux from Ballinteer, okay. And Oisín Manning from St. Jude.
Yeah,
I think there is a good few people that are eligible for Wicklow, and then obviously like the two lads come in from Dublin and they're very professional, and everything they do is just 100%. But I'd say a few more. Wicklow might kind of chase a few of them, but definitely two lads that brought in have been unbelievable this year. Yeah. Let's say especially lads come from Dublin, you know, you'd think that Dublin might look down on Wicklow, but the two lads obviously seen the chance and took it with both hands and come in and gave everything, and they seem to really enjoy it. They fit it in straight away with all the lads. It's where they run the team the last 4 or 5 years, so they just fit it in straight away after a week or two.
Can you see yourself developing a particular style of football with John Evans?
Well, it's very very fast paced now, and it's just pure hard work. That's all we kind of want to set out, that it's just constantly working, and you're always attacking in big groups, but like defending, then we're kind of constantly working back and just minding our D. But we set up a kind of nice playing style. It's attacking football, but it's a lot through the hands, and then it's a lot through the hands and just quick, really. Yeah,
it's funny when you think about people like Smith, who's in Westmeath this year, or Cox, who's in with Roscommon. I don't have as big an issue as some people do with this, about seeing players who never, like Devereaux, for example, actually played for Dublin in the O'Byrne Cup, but never got a chance to kick on with that. And if the connection is there, like, I don't see a huge amount of harm in him coming down and maybe rising their level and having an influence there, and suddenly it can spawn something. Like, it's like they've got an outside manager there too, you know. John Evans will come in, hopefully benefit, lift the standard, and then we'll leave after again.
Speaking of John Evans, I was just reading some of his comments in the build-up this week, and he sounds like the CEO of Just Eat or Deliveroo. he said, it's going to be a formidable challenge, but the players are looking forward to the game. We know what it's going to take to deliver a victory, but we are confident in our own ability. Both sides are sprinkled with quality players, so it should make for an interesting clash. There is no doubt that we are ready to deliver a big challenge. Should we win it, it will be looked upon as a shock, but that is what championship football is all about. We know what Kildare can deliver, but we are determined to deliver more. He's delivering a lot there.
Is that five delivers?
Yeah. That's five delivers in the space of three sentences.
It's good going by John.
Yeah.
interesting, like I'd forgotten until you told me earlier, Morris, that they had a Leinster Championship win last year against Offaly.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about it, I suppose, when we get to the spreads in a while. But I don't know. I don't find it. I have to say, I find the start of the football championship rather underwhelming.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah. So there are interesting stories, and we can look to them. And you know, I think Kildare could be an interesting team as the year goes on. But I like, for me, a lot of what it spells out is just the disparity between the haves and the have-nots. And you know, we'll even see it like with in the Munster Championship now, when Clare and Tipperary, I think, will both have very handy wins over Waterford and Limerick, and Clare and Tipperary, like, you know, will both be underdogs at least in the Munster semi-final. You can obviously argue about Tip and Cork, and that could be a close game. So it's like it's three different levels all playing in the same competition. It always just makes me wonder why, I have to say, and that's what this time of year is for football. And it's not to bring it back to hurling, but just the contrast of what we've seen from the rejuvenated, you know, provincial championships in the hurling last year, and obviously we're getting straight into it again this week. It just makes me kind of think, it's like, why are we limping into another football season that isn't going to get going until the middle of, like, you know, the middle of July, you know, when we kind of start finally, you know, really getting something out of it.
Yeah, you know, like, it's funny, I really don't want to start powering other, I suppose, influences here. So just like lay my cards on the table, like I was reading Mike Quirk's column this week, I totally agreed with him, and Mike Quirk made a really good point, which I felt, about the football championship, which is that, you know, there is a world outside of what we're all aware of, but it's just the fact there's a huge amount of really good games that we all miss out on kind of regularly. So say for example, like the narrative, what is going on with the Mead Offaly game this weekend, in terms of like you've got a resurgent Mead, how well they did in the league, coming back up to Division 1, and then Offaly finishing out the year so close, running Clare, John Mohan down there now, like the kind of, is something developing there. That's a narrative that I'm actually really looking forward to seeing play out this weekend. I'm looking forward to seeing a Derry team who just won a Division 4 finally seem to be going back in the right direction, try and lay it down against, you know, Tyrone. Like they're not a Division 4 team, arguably they're not a Division 3 team either, in terms of right now. That's I think
Tyrone and Derry is different, I think. Like there's another, we'll talk about it in a while, but that's another level. Like,
and I do think there's something kind of sad about the fact that, like, on in the hurling example, that, you know, Offaly will play Laois on Saturday night and none of us will get to see like a hurler like Dooley, you know, do his thing there, and that all that brings. I think there's something kind of sad about the fact that Damien Casey, the Tyrone, I was just reading an interview like with Matty Lennon, the Tyrone manager, earlier this week. Like, Casey hit 110 in the first three league games this year for Tyrone. Like, in terms of, they're playing Mayo this weekend in the Nicky Rackard to kick things off. That's kind of a level of kind of ability that we just will never hear about. It's a guy who never gets, and I know they don't play for coverage, they don't play for the limelight, but I do think it's kind of sad that there's nothing done. Like, they're just totally cut off is what it looks like, that there's no kind of coverage or heed paid to them. And I think at least in football they might be trying to incorporate them, even if it's not it might be an unintentional effect, but
I'm not suggesting we don't cover them. I'm saying that I'm not looking forward to watching,
which is fair enough,
an 8-point minimum win for Kildare, I would say, at the weekend, you know. I'm not going to be watching it. It's not on TV and I understand that, but I just think as a starting point to the biggest competition that we have, it doesn't really get the appetite, it doesn't whet the appetite in the way that the start of the hurling championship is.
I think Morris has turned into a bit of a hipster now. A hipster. In that,
in what sense?
Well, the hipsters originally wanted to restructure the championship, and now the hipster wants to keep the championship the same. So, Morris is going back. He wants to keep the original championship.
I think there's something in what, like, we've heard in the last 3 weeks. I think in terms of Liam Gavigan and Niall Murphy, particularly, who were really strong on the idea that, like, they would hate to see anything kind of diluted. That it means like slightly less for them, the one big day. I think London epitomised that at the weekend by, you know, running Galway close. Like, if anyone's seen the highlights, they were within an inch of beating Galway. You know, if he sticks his foot out a second earlier and scores the goal, that all of a sudden it's a totally different game. It didn't happen, but just the fact that they were competitive and kind of performed on the day, I think that they probably are deserving of that chance as well. And, like, I would hate to see it go back to a Tommy Murphy level, to be honest.
Yeah. I agree with you in so much as, having listened to them players, and like those two in the last month, and then, you know, various more last year and the year before, I've given up on having a set idea on what the championship structure should be, because I ultimately think what the players in those counties think is more important than what I think sitting in this studio, and the format should be whatever they want and whatever suits them. But, like, it doesn't make it any more appealing to watch from an outsider, to see, like, I'm a lot more interested in Wexford and Louth this week than I am in Wicklow and Kildare, or even Meath and Offaly, because that's their level, and that's like to see, like, ultimately who's going to be cannon fodder later in the Leinster Championship to Dublin, but that'll be their matchup at each other's level.
Yeah, no, for sure. The one other game that we probably should talk about is Roscommon and Leitrim. On that team, actually, because I've got a question to ask about Roscommon and Leitrim. So Roscommon last year made the Super 8s, didn't kick on at all, and kind of were hammered in those three games. And so, Mark, from your own perspective, right, they've got a new coach in Antti Cunningham. He's also Conor Cox, who's made a big impact. They've gone to ultra, ultra defensive, as we saw in the league. What is success for them? If this is the new style they want to go with, so say their previous style was really nice to watch, but didn't get them through to the Super 8s. By following that logic, does this new style now have to get them to a semi-final?
I don't know if it has to this year, like, if you're building for something, but, like, I don't know if it ever will. Like, I wouldn't have faith in the fact that they're actually going to push on. They need to be trying to get back. Like, there's probably going to be, as this develops, you're going to see like three or four teams that will probably swap, interchange each other. In like 1 year they're in the Super 8, the next year they're not, the next year they get back into it. It's almost like yo-yo clubs in the Premier League and the Championship. So like Roscommon are going to, like, are they going to turn into a West Brom or someone that, like, you know, maybe this week, this year they miss out, next year they get back in again. But I can't see how, just judging on their league form and how it's going, I can't see how they'll make a semi-final this year. And it would be a massive, it would be massive success if they made a semi-final. But you'd have to, you'd have to imagine they should be making the Super 8s to stay. Like, I don't think, I don't see, like, implementing a defensive system like that shouldn't set them back anything. It might take a while to develop that and then develop an attacking structure that gets them further, but they should be aiming for the Super 8s at least this year.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, like, sometimes I think it's okay to have, like, a degree of success. I'm curious what you think about this, especially, Mick, because, like, sometimes I think there's nothing wrong with, you know, recognizing your level might just be to be a Super 8 team and not necessarily kicking on more. But the fact that you're going to go and change your style, like, has to lead to, it has to be over, like, results at the cost of that. And if they're not there, then I think that it's kind of a fair enough criticism, potentially.
Considering they have the ability to play at that level, exactly, in a, in a more entertaining and positive way, I probably agree with you there. Like, you know, but ultimately, that's an unfair comparison because how you play is down to what, who your manager is and what your coaching team is, and that they have to play by their own philosophy or what they think is going to work out the best for them. So if you look at, like, McStay and Cunningham are always going to have two different styles. So it's not really a comparable, it's not really like Cunningham comes in and goes, oh, look, we played that style of football, that was as far as we can get, therefore I should play this way. That's not his way of coaching. It's probably not his way of setting up teams. So in that way, I can't really argue with it. It's not, am I happy about it as a person probably going to watch 3 or 4 Roscommon games this year? Obviously, you'd rather it the other way. Like, but I kind of see your point. I don't think they're going to reach necessarily any further. They're not going to, I can't see Roscommon going any further. I don't know if they have the talent level to be in the top 4 teams in the country.
In which case, then maybe we should just trust in the
style. No, but yeah, like, I mean, that's what we'd ideally like to see. I just don't think you can do that. I think you have to coach whatever way you're coaching.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose. And I suppose it's probably, we should give them at least one championship game before making any sort of judgment.
Assumptions, yeah, yeah. I'm going by so your thing.
The ball hasn't been thrown in, and so far we've restructured the championship and we've given Anthony Cunningham the sack.
If people heard my kind of slight kind of snigger earlier on, by the way, just to explain myself, it was that Mark went through an entire answer without revealing his utter hatred for the county and football team and football fans, indeed, of Roscommon. So I want to personally congratulate him for that, you know.
It's because it's the start of the championship and he's overcome by a wave of positivity, but slowly but surely.
Seem to be today. I'm sitting here like Mr. Misery. I don't know what's going on.
The cynicism will drag him down eventually.
Or that I just want to, you know, play my cards close to my chest, because when you talk about those 3 or 4 teams that could become yo-yo teams at the Super 8s, you would be saying it's the two top teams on that list would be Roscommon and Cavan.
I don't know.
We're still going to hear from Patrick Horgan, the Cork hurler, and preview all the hurling championship later on in the show, as well as play against the handicaps. But just before we move off football, I think it's worth kind of taking a moment to take stock and look back at the kind of the sad news that came over the weekend, which is that GAA legend Eugene McGee passed away. A man who, it's really funny, and I'm kind of curious to hear your own take on this, Mick, because from my own perspective, I knew Eugene McGee, the journalist, because from that was the lifespan that I knew, and I kind of became, he associated him with, especially his column with the Indo and the Black Card and stuff like that. And yet there's kind of, it's one of those really kind of curious examples of a guy who comes in as a coach, becomes a legendary figure there, and there's the same thing in the media, and because has this kind of seismic impact on the association.
Yeah, and just like the interesting part thing of Eugene was that, like, you know, he was a journalist by profession and just happened to be a football manager as well. So you just put those two things together, and, you know, he obviously has a long life as a columnist and a pundit afterwards, you know. But like, that was really shocking news the other morning. It was just really surprising to hear. And he's someone that I haven't personally dealt with in a few years now, you know, but would have regularly talked to him, you know, and was always someone that I just found kind of like, you know, he kind of had a kind of a gruff enough demeanor. And you used to be like, when I was a kind of a young journalist kind of breaking in, I would, like, you know, you'd be given the sort of simple ones, the people that we'd speak to regularly, you know, you'd be given them to kind of organize, like, you know, to come on the show, and I'd be ringing up Eugene. I'd be half afraid of him, you know, because he was kind of, yeah. But then anytime there was, this is just a kind of a small personal thing, but like there was any time then when there was anything a little bit more complicated than just, will you come on the show? Say if I needed some information about something or I needed to talk through a topic that was a little bit more complicated. It was like a different person. It was like a flick of a switch, and then it was like the most helpful he could possibly be. Kind of knew that I, like, you know, as a kind of a 22-year-old, I was sort of, that didn't really know what I was doing. I was kind of out my depth, did my job for me in a lot of those ways, and was just always insanely helpful and professional and brilliant to deal with. And, you know, as someone, I think he was a good football pundit and columnist in that he had opinions that none of us would have always agreed with. I don't think anybody would have always disagreed either. I don't think he was completely massively polarizing as a figure, rather than he had individual opinions, you know. But that's a brilliant way to be, because that makes, you know, people are always going to talk. I always felt like he believed what he said. And more importantly, then, I only know him as a journalist as well, because his, what happened was like in the 80s and stuff like that. But the way he revolutionized football management in the 80s and did what he did with Offaly, and the stories there are too many to go into, but I think people should read. There's a lot of things you can read, but like I would massively recommend that, if you haven't already, to read Michael Foley's Kings of September, the book about Offaly stopping the five in a row in 82. And Eugene's a huge part of that, and Mick's been talking about that a lot this week, about how much of a help he was in writing that book. But, you know, that's the story of, that's the real, I think, football story about Eugene, is like what he did with that Offaly team, and how he kind of revolutionized being a manager from his days in UCD all the way through, is kind of his real legacy, I think.
Yeah, it's mad. Like, there is that thing of, we all, like, we're not Sky Sports or anything, but I think just the way this generation seemed to think the football and hurling were invented in the 90s. Like, there's such a history beyond that. And even actually looking at it today, I was reading the article again that Paul Fitzpatrick wrote in the Anglo-Celtic, kind of collated a number of different stories about Eugene over the years. And I was just looking at the featured image, admiring it, going, geez, that's a great image of Eugene McGeehan when he was cab manager in the dugout with a load of lads in trench coats and peak caps standing next to him with selectors and stuff. And then I was there going, wait a minute, is that my uncle standing next to Eugene? It turns out it was. But it's just things like the stories of yesteryear that you wouldn't even realize happened. It turns out that I believe, it seems my uncle was a selector with Eugene McGee when he was cap manager, which I just discovered. But and even there was a great story in that of David Walsh looking to do some sort of piece on Offaly, and Eugene McGee was like, well, sure, maybe do you want to come down and train with us? Togged out and trained with the county teams.
Yeah.
Like, that's the sort of access that you wouldn't get anything like next or near nowadays.
He also had like such kind of like real affection and love and protection of those kind of guys as well. Like, I mean, we did a show years ago, News Talk, with in Burr and Offaly, and it was mainly hurling, and we wanted to bring a bit of football in, so we brought Eugene down and Seamus Darby as well and talked about 82, and it was really, really fun. But like, Eugene was almost like representing Seamus. It was like, oh, you know, this is what, you know, I don't think it'd be a good idea to do it this way, I think you should do it this, you know. And he was just very much kind of like, he has this sort of like, still almost like, up until, you know, his passing, it was like almost a protection of those lads that he led, you know. And I think there's something really, really brilliant about that. Also heard he, very funny man when he wanted to be as well, you know, like not a drinker or anything like that. But the great line I heard a lot this week was, you know, asked about Offaly's preparations 1 year and how seriously they were taken. I think it might have been a Leinster final or something like that. I think it was all Ireland final. And he goes, oh, sure, some of these lads haven't had a pint since Wednesday.
Right, the serious business begins this weekend with the hurling. Mick set up there as I said that. We're going to kick things off, I suppose, by talking about Cork, because we were down in Glen Rovers. This is actually, it's funny, we did a show down in Glen Rovers last weekend with Sports Direct, Clubhouse Live event, and it insanely whetted my appetite for the Munster Championship. Even just to hear it, like whatever about the content, what they're speaking about, just the passion that people like Lara and Shawnee speak with just kind of becomes infectious, and you're like, yeah, geez, this is great, isn't it? And you kind of, you get wrapped up in it.
Yeah. and the people kind of hanging on every word they say, like, you know, because it's funny because we're going to play like the majority of the chat about from the lads about the actual Munster Championship. I was listening back to it and you're hearing, like, you know, like I'd be like throwing out a crap joke and all and people were like laughing at it because they were genuinely just hanging on everything you said because they can't wait for this now. Like, and the best thing about the Munster Championship as well is like all the Cork lads that were there, they all think they're going to win the All-Ireland. I think everybody in Tip kind of like, you know, there might be a little bit more questions, but they're sort of quietly confident. You know, Waterford think they're back. Limerick are going to retain it. We won't even talk about Clare, but like, but you know, it's in, you wouldn't know what way any of these games are going to go. And I think when you start talking about it, then you kind of go, oh, Jesus, it's got to be as good as last year. I hope it is.
I think Limerick could win it easily enough.
Yeah.
There's my hot take.
But very few away wins, you know, and that's the thing. Now that there's full-on home games at Waterford there, I think Clare winning in Thurles was the only proper away win in the Munster Championship last year, you know. So it kind of, like, if that continues, it makes it very, very difficult to know who's going to come out because it'll be one shock somewhere that'll decide the whole thing. Like,
It's funny, Mark, you said that you fancy Limerick because they're only beaten by one team in last year's championship, and that was Cork, who probably definitely bet them once.
Could have bet them twice.
Surely should have bet them twice. Certainly, as the man we're just about to hear from would like to argue, Patrick Horgan, who it's kind of like for Cork to be as close as they've been. I mean, two Munster finals the last 2 years, literally in the dying on their feet in the extra time of semi final last year. Kind of, it's about going to the well again, I suppose, this year, and we can hear from Patrick on that now.
On that game then, like, we're going to talk a little bit about this year, but I think it's kind of important as we look ahead to the championship to remember that Cork weren't very far away last year, you know, and the All-Ireland final always takes on a life of its own, and that becomes the narrative and everyone talks about Limerick. You're a kind of a Nicky Quaid wonder save away from the All-Ireland final. You've won two Munster titles in a row. It's like it's probably as good a place as you've been in going into a championship in your years at Cork.
Yeah, but like there's only one thing with that is like as well as we did last year, like unbeaten it all year in 70 minutes, that's all brilliant, but you're back into Munster now with five teams that are all capable of beating each other, and there's no guarantees really. There's three qualify and two really good teams have to sit it out for the rest of the year, and that's just the way it is. But going back to the Limerick game, I think it was 63 minutes, we were six up, and I think five out of the six points Limerick got with five frees, and two were for overcarrying by us, our own mistakes. So there's nothing we can do about that now, but we can just use it going forward with the mistakes we made, like, you know.
It's a strange one. I think if we had said to you in 2008 that this would be you'd have played 11 full seasons for Cork and not won in All-Ireland, it'd be hard to believe, I suppose, you know. And obviously you've come close, like, in the last 2 years getting the final, very close in 2013, but like it does feel like that is the next natural step, that, like, you know, do it or not do it, that's the ultimate goal, is win the All-Ireland this year.
Yeah, that's the goal every year, and it's even harder when 13 happens when we're fleeced, like, you know.
Depends what way you look at it, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know where the ref got the extra few minutes, but he got him in.
I can't comment. I have
they're
to be
the.
Yeah,
they're the five margins, though. Like they're the break of a ball. I remember when we did look back at that, it was like there was five breaks of the ball, and five of them went to Clare, like, on the day. So if one of them went to us, it was over. So it was just small margins, but that's the goal every year to get to the final. But it's, as you see, like with Munster, like it's a long road. Like,
yeah. And look, we've got, like, you know, you came so close last year. Like, I suppose people will be looking and seeing, you know, maybe the Limerick bench last year, you know, and it might have been just in that match rather than in general. But, like, you know, is there new blood kind of coming through to kind of take that next step and take it off you guys if it needs be? And I suppose one old guy that's back is another Glenn man, Stephen McDonald's back after his year off. So that's definitely good news anyway.
Yeah, Mackie's back. And like every year since 13, or even since before that, there's been young fellas coming onto the panel every year, and our panel's getting stronger the whole time. And like you need it now because you're gonna have four games in 5 weeks or something, is it? And they're all very intense, like, and like they're draining. So you need everyone. And yeah, we're 21s getting to the All-Ireland final last year and everything else. So I think we had 11 of them on the panel last year, so they're all still there with an extra one or two coming this year, so we're looking all right, yeah.
Brilliant stuff there from Patrick. Are they contenders, Mick?
I think they definitely are. Like, you know, I was down with John Myler a week after they lost to Limerick last year in the semi-final, and he was already plotting. He'd already rang Stephen McDonald. I don't know if that was out to kind of more or less tell him he was coming back. You know, Patrick mentioned that he was back there, but, like, you know, he was more or less told him, you're coming back here, we're going to win the All-Ireland, you know. And whether they do or not, I'm not sure, but they're not far away. And I wouldn't worry about their league form at all. I wouldn't worry about anyone's league form except for Waterford, really, who I think they needed that boost. Nobody else really didn't matter without the relegation. And so I think they were up and down, but I think there's enough talent there. I think if they could just bring on a couple of extra players from the bench, a bit more pressure on some of those forwards especially, I think they could absolutely do it. They've won the last two Munsters, and they were really unlucky last year. People have forgotten about them a little bit because a final becomes the only thing that people remember about a championship, you know. And Cork easily could have won the All-Ireland last year.
We might actually hear from Lara Corbett, Johnny McGrath and Derek McGrath now, who spoke at the Clubhouse Live down in Glen Rovers and gave kind of a brilliant preview for the Munster Championship and all that it entails. And if there's anything that's going to drum up your excitement ahead of this weekend, I think it's this.
Speaking of shows, I suppose now that we know that Tipperary look kind of rejuvenated, Waterford as well, Cork and Limerick, both powerhouses with Clare, looking ahead to the Munster Championship, we're probably set for the most competitive championship ever, arguably.
Yeah, and I think that people are kind of going on what happened just last year. And it took people by surprise last year because we didn't think that it was going to come as quick and finish as quick. So if you look at Tipperary this year, on the 12th of May to play Cork down here, then the 19th we go to Thurles. So in the space of 8 days, like, you know, it's in and out. Your two games, you lose your two games, your year is nearly over. So that's how quick it is. So you're talking about getting recovery, you're talking about then you're getting out again. So I think that it will be a good Munster Championship. Can it compete with last year? I think teams have to go at it a kind of a little bit different. They're going to have to think a little quicker. Just last year, you're two games down, you didn't know where you were, and then Tip found out, oh, geez, I'm at home for a year. So it's 48 weeks. The Tip are idle out of Championship Ireland. They've played 4 games in 4 weeks. It's over, sort of. So that's what you have to think about.
Derek's nodding his head. You had a similar experience. But that's what it's like in the new system, though, isn't it? Like, you know, you didn't have a good first day in Ennis, and then you're chasing all the way after that, and then before you know it's kind of over and not necessarily ever playing badly. Just yeah, so competitive.
Yeah, and it's that's the importance of the first game is just huge, you know. It's huge. Momentum, confidence. You're not chasing it. You know, and even this year, I can see it being a small bit different. I can see someone going out in a head-to-head, two teams on 4 points, one team on 2 points. I think the draw last year that one team got, our Cork and Tip drew, and then ourselves and Tip drew. You know, and the fine margins. You talked about Nicky Quaid's incident with Jamie Harnedy. If the ghost goal is awarded for us, we're going to Cork, we're going to Thurles the next week. We beat Cork, Cork are out on the head-to-head. You know, without being, you know, as I said, dismissive of us underperforming in other games, with not a full deck or anything like a full deck, missing 5 or 6 backs from the All-Ireland final, if we take Cork in that last match, we're in the championship, Cork are out. And, you know, I think it's that's the fine margins. It's the unknown as well. I think there's a certain amount of doubt about a lot of teams. A lot of refer to last year. And I think we're doing a lot of referring to last year. You know, Cork were close, Clare were close. 2017, we were beaten in the All-Ireland final by a goal. I listened to a whole winter of, geez, you're very close. And 2018 went into fast dissipation, disintegration, I can tell you. So you need to be careful in living. There's a little bit of doubt this year. The only reason I would justify the doubt is because of the league situation. No promotion, no relegation, and everything seems to be channeled towards a performance in the championship. So I think there's doubt about every team, bar Limerick and Munster and Waterford, have had a good league campaign as well. You know, I think there's doubt about Cork, Tip and Clare because you just don't know where they're at. You know, there's no form line, if you like.
Yeah. We're going to get to some of your questions in a few minutes. I know you've been talking to Mark. He's just over there if you have any more that you wanted to ask to the lads. But we just want to talk about the Munster Championship a little bit more for a few minutes first, and then we'll get to them. But what about Limerick then, lads? Like, I mean, we'll come back to Cork. We'll talk a little bit about Tip and the others. But Limerick, All-Ireland champions, I think the way they seem to have handled that, like with the, like it's like the players have, you know, they just seem to have a good head on their shoulders, and you know they had a good league. They were the best team in the league again, and you know it was like sometimes you can win a close All Ireland, and just getting over the line can be the thing that kicks you on. But ultimately, it is so close; it's hard to know if that's going to happen yet. But they do look like they're in good shape, anyway, Shani.
Yeah, the form guide is good. Obviously, won the league, you know, and won it comprehensive in the end. I suppose they're against Waterford. Sorry, but but they're look like Lar was on about age profiles and different guys, 23, 24 year olds, and then normally it's 28 or 30 year old as a leader. But like their leaders are 21, 22, 23, like Cian Lynch and Aaron Gillan, like they are men. They are men at young ages, you know, and they're taking on the leadership mantle and they're embracing it and they're reveling in it. I mean, Gillan has been sensational as well all year, really, through Fitzgibbon campaigns and National League campaigns. And I suppose, like, I've been in management more as a selector. Derek has been in management as a manager, which is completely different. Like, and I often wonder, like, you know, like, say, fellas now are getting so fit, so athletic and able and so durable that, you know, before there was a gap between the league and the championships. So a lad might have a few pounds in him for league and, you know, gap between the league and championship, 5 or 6 weeks, get yourself fit. But, like, oh, you personally put a lot of stock into the league now. Fellas are capable of doing it. Like, they're way more durable than they were before. They train all the time. Patrick will tell you that. They're training all the time. So on form at the moment, based on how fellas have played in Fitzgibbon and how fellas have done in the league, say, the form guy totally tips, is pointed towards Limerick. Now, to buck that trend a little bit, again, not don't play in Cork just because Lara's here. You know, Tip won an under-21 championship last year. I think they shouldn't have been winning an Asses Rolla winning, right? We absolutely annihilated them in the Munster final. The form guide was totally for Cork. We'd beaten Wexford fairly comprehensively in the All-Ireland semi-final, and everything was pointed towards a Cork victory. And, you know, Tip produced a performance that night that was made of grit and steel, and then they brought in a manager this year who typifies everything that is associated with grit and steel. So while Tip have had a reasonable league campaign, I still think that these feckers are waiting in the high grass. And while, like, Cork still got to almost the final last year, drawing two games, you know, and the first game is huge, Derek. I still think, irrespective of what happens, I still have a feeling that in that high grass, despite Cork off for three in a row, despite Limerick being the farm team and everything pointed towards them earlier in the season, I still think there's something brewing in Tipperary.
Lara, on that, I mean, obviously as someone who's played under Liam Sheedy before, this year now, a lot of people might have perceived it as being about betting in and maybe building towards something in the future, but certainly, according to Shawnee anyway, it's going to be more than that.
Well, I don't know about what's been in the high grass. We'll just say Tipperary had a very, very bad year last year. Liam Sheedy is in. There's a lot of pressure being put on the management and Liam Sheedy and Tip this year, and I hope it doesn't feed into the players. Just because Liam is back and Eamon O'Shea is back doesn't mean that everything is going to click. You still have to have the players, you still have to have them finely tuned. And Liam has gone for a few years, so just because he comes back straight away, it just doesn't happen like that. It needs a bit of time. And in Tipperary, we think that we're going to win it year on year, or we're going to be there or thereabouts, but they do need a bit of time. Then you look at the league, like, you know, Johnny is right, you look at the league, they lost two or three games by a pint, so it was in and around, there wasn't much in it. Their performances were good. There was a lot of criticism at home because they were losing games, which is good for them because it tuned them all in. And what that does is when everyone starts giving out about you, your team actually stick closer together, because then you can actually focus on, there's something else happening outside of our circle, it's what goes on inside our circle. And managers use that to a high degree. Sometimes they use it to their advantage, but it does, it makes people stick together. I do think that Liam is doing a very good job. The guys are stuck together. Us as supporters are coming down. There's a small bit of hope, but we're going to come. But as regards being in the long grass, we'll have to wait and see.
I'm just wondering what type of manager Sheedy is. Like, I'd say, it sounds like you're delighted he's back and all. My main worry, listening to Tip from the last few years, is that there's been a lot of noise coming out, yeah. whether it's bullshit or not, yeah. or what, you know, we don't know, but like, there's always stories. And Sheedy's the kind of guy that will bring them together anyway and kind of make it us against the world, is he?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think of Liam Sheedy being back. I was delighted that he was back, but I always think in life you get one chance, you get one opportunity. And so, for instance, we had him in 2008, 9 and 10. We would have loved him to keep him. And when you're at the height of it and when you get a thing right, you have your players are right, the management is right, he's in the right place, right frame of mind. When you do break the few years, it's very, very hard to come back and things change. And you're coming back with a reputation as well that you try to back up. So there's loads of other things that have to change since you're gone. So you're trying to come back in and you're trying to emulate what you've done before, and now people expect it of you. We had our chance and it was cut short for us because management changed for whatever different reasons. And now we're living in a bit of hope that we're trying to, our memory is telling us, well, we saw this a few years ago, they've done it, they're going to do it again. And us, the supporters, are saying the same thing.
It doesn't always happen, though.
No, it doesn't always happen, no.
And I suppose, Derek, that's where we kind of bring in Waterford. I mean, like, you know, we are looking at a team that in 2017 made the All-Ireland final and in 2019 is still more than young enough to do it, and there's still all those players still there. You didn't have them all last year. We've got a new regime now. You're not involved anymore. Are you liking what you're seeing? Is the evolution of it from the league?
Yeah, well, I think the first point you made is that they are a very young team, which people don't realise. Just because Shane Bennett and Austin Gleeson and them around 5 years, they're still 22 years of age. You know, they're an ideal age profile in actual fact. They're a very, very, probably one of the youngest teams around. I know Michael and Kevin probably raised the overall average of the team. So, and I still think they're good lads. You know, Shawnee talked about the steadiness of the Limerick lads. My argument is that most lads that are involved in intercounty hurling are really steady, ambitious lads that are doing their absolute best, that are humble in their ways, that, you know, are absolute dream to work with. And I'd say that's the majority, in actual fact, all the Waterford lads are that kind of ilk, ambitious and steady and don't get carried away. And there's a good culture there established by Davey, Michael Ryan, myself, and built and being built on now by Porrick. And I think I think the key thing with Waterford, if you look at the graph, 2015 and 16, we were in the league finals, in three All-Ireland semi-finals, eventually got to an All-Ireland final, didn't perform. So even naturally, there's nearly a drop-off last year with Cam, and that's not making excuses in any way. And I think you know, they're chasing it now and they're hungry. They had 6 months to reflect on management, who they'd get, who'd be involved and all. So they're back since the 1st of October. So I think the form line is good for Waterford coming into it. I think there's no doubt about where they're going to be. You know, they played one round of hurling championship. They were back at it the Wednesday after the first round of the hurling without the footballers. We say four or five footballers that played two more club matches. So they've been at it for 5 or 6 weeks now. And they have 2 weeks great preparation ahead of being in Portugal last week. So I'm optimistic based on even the home grounds, the emotion that's gone into the decision around Welsh Park. And if you look at, in actual fact, if you do a factual study of it, our record in Welsh Park has been poor during my tenure. Like, overall, it's been poor in terms of the league situation. But there's so much emotion gone into the decision to go to Welsh Park. I think there'll be a really kind of, you know, emotive performance that day, and we're mixed with calculation. It'll be just all in against Clare. So I think Waterford will be off to the perfect start. 2 points, first match of the year, 2 o'clock in Welsh Park, and they'll have the 2 points in the bag. Sorry to rub it in.
I was going
to
say, Clare are getting some battering here today. I don't know what's that about.
This period as a manager, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on that, Derek, because just even to go back to your coaching conference for a minute, you spoke about the idea that after a big loss, like we take Cork for example, and after what happened against Limerick, what you kind of stressed was that you don't just move on straight away, that you actually have to feel something first, that maybe not dwell on it, but take loss.
Yeah. Well, look, I think if you're managing your own county, in your own club, you're living in Waterford, you're in the heart of it every day, it has to mean something to you, so it has to feel, you know, people often say, would you walk into a door of another county, you close the door on it and you're kind of moving away and you have no local radio, no local state, no local papers, no local commentary, etc., that it's easier. But if you're a personality that you're going to give everything to everything that you're involved in, that's your personality. It doesn't mean you're necessarily locked in for 72 hours of grieving, but you do feel it. Jesus Almighty, the mood of the house. Listen, my young lad is playing the under-14 team side in De La Salle. He came in whatever that night they won the Fela. He, you know, they won the Fela last week. He was, whatever, he didn't go well in the match. He faked the hurlies into the corner. You know, he said, I'm not going up there again. You know, that's the natural inclination for any hurler. They're growing up, they're going through the whole process of it. So if you're on the cusp of getting to an All-Ireland final and you're a horrendous year like we had last year, you're obviously going to feel it. You're going to grieve for a while. But look, you move on because you've no choice.
Yeah. Seanie, we talked about Limerick, Waterford, Tip, Cork then, right? Like, starting off with Tip and Páirc Uí Chaoimh, there's no bigger game, especially with a new pitch, hopefully.
Inch you, Donny.
We talked to Patrick there about kind of like, you know, that there's always that kind of need for new blood that you are kicking on from next year. It's great that Stephen is back in the panel as well. Do you see, are you happy with kind of the winter that Cork had kind of following on from last year?
Yeah, and anyone that knows John Moyler, God, he goes to everything. He leaves no stone unturned. He scours the county, and in fairness to him, he goes to every type of a catfight that's going to try and find a player. And, you know, like he can make a big call as well. And like Aidan Walsh was a big call playing football for the last couple of years. And like he has his critics and he has this and he has that. But I saw him against Wexford. He was outstanding. And I suppose he was very good for Kanturk recently in a game. And like he's got a pair of balls, Daddy. He's got a pair of balls. He'll go out there and he'll go looking. Alan Cadigan, huge trump card. I remember loads of times Derek Hughes saying against Cork that he was one of the marquee players that he always targeted to mark and stay out of the game.
Yeah, even just the semi-final of 17, in the run-up to that game, I think Cadigan had been on fire in the Munster final, I think, against Clare, and we changed our normal marking allocation. Noel would normally pick up Patrick Horgan, and we changed Noel over to Cadigan. I think Patrick Horgan picked off 7 or 8 points of play on the other side. So, that's one of the benefits of planning sometimes. It's not, you know, but like sometimes, yeah, look, he's a big ace in the pack. I think, just following on from what Sean, he said, the Cork sextet of forwards, Kearney, Harnedy, Lahan, Cadigan, Horgan, Luke Mead, Kingston, Aidan Walsh, whatever way they'll go, and I'm missing someone very obvious there as I'm talking. Dara Fitzgibbon played in the forwards against Dublin on Tuesday night in Abbottstown, so he might be in the forwards.
You're still scouting.
Still scouting, yeah. So, the possibility, you know, so the sextet of forwards are probably the best sextet of forwards, with Tip's forwards, you know, potentially. John McGrath, Bonner Maher, Bubbles, you know, Jake Maris, Noel McGrath.
Callanan,
like, Jesus Christ, like, you know, you're you're trying to pin them all down to one day, like, you know. So that's the interesting thing for me. Will they hit the ground running in terms of, will you see O'Shea's influence with, like you saw with Lahr, with that freedom of movement? Will Jake Morris be the guy that'll move around? Will John McGrath be the guy that'll move around? That's the interesting thing for me. And with Cork, I think it's just a matter of keeping that stability in the defence that ensures those forwards are able to do their job, you know. And that's, I've taken Sonny's stance there now. Sorry, I'm that guy. I'll be shut up for me, Steve.
Who are the three teams coming out of Munster there?
Sure, I have to say Tip is number one. Tip, Cork, Limerick.
Tip, Cork, Limerick. Seanie?
Who's coming out number one?
Either, any order. There's three teams coming out of the five.
Yeah. Three. I can give you one. I'm not sure about three. I mentioned Tip earlier. I think Tip will come out.
And he has to say Cork and he Tip Limerick, so there's three.
I'm trying to get Waterford in my old buddy. Waterford will be the other boat.
But cut the nonsense
there.
There's
three different ones.
I'm not going to be popular for this now. Just on based on preparation, based on doubt, if you look at it last year, Tip and Waterford didn't come out. They were in the bottom two. At least one of those two is going to be in the top three this year. And if you go to Paddy Power, he'll tell you it's 4-1 for Waterford, the outside bet of the 5 or 6. I think Tip will beat Cork in the first match. Okay, I'm just gonna go through the anomaly of matches in my head.
Sorry for your troubles, Dan.
Just like, you know, it's, I know, like, so geez, you can't be a hypocrite to be on something else in a while saying that. So there's no point in being anything but honest. So
Sunday game, but
cheers, not mind the Sunday game.
You took my spot, like, you bollocks.
There you go. Oh, Jesus Christ! I'll never get a job in the Glen now. I can tell you, there's no sweeper ever in the Glen. I think Tip will beat Cork in the first match, and I think Limerick will beat Cork in the second match in Gaelic grounds, which means I think the third match will be a possible head-to-head encounter with Waterford, Cork. So if I think, so if I go on that, I think Waterford will be clear in the first match. That'll put them on two. The Waterford tip match will then become a whoever wins it is true on head-to-heads. Because whoever wins between Waterford and Tip will be guaranteed four, and they'll probably be out of it. So I'm basing it on 2 weeks' preparation and a little bit of doubt in my head about too much talk about last year, you know? And I'm ignoring that Corkness, and I'm ignoring the fact that they're probably the best forward line in Munster. So I'm saying all the right things to balance what I'm just saying, but I'm going to say Waterford, not based on any bias, just based on a genuine feeling that they're coming and they're going to win their two home games. Welsh Park is going to be a huge factor. I think Tip, like Lars said and Shawnee said, I don't think they're high grass. I think it's been very cleverly manipulated almost that they're in year one of a project, when the reality is they have the players to win the All-Ireland on any given year, in my opinion. And I think Limerick have the ability to mix it up. I think they have the ability to go anywhere and go change it up, go with two big fellas inside, change it. I think they're just a little bit ahead of everyone. So I say Limerick, Tip and Waterford.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media.
Mick, are you mortally offended by the fact that your own Clare were overlooked there?
Like, not even mentioned. The only time they were mentioned was McGrath saying Derek McGrath saying they were going to lose. So, fine, look, you know, we'll wait in the long grass, or the tall grass, as Shawnee called it there. I always thought it was the long grass myself, but we'll wait in the long grass. I'd have some worries about Clare, but I also think that, like, as I said to the crowd there straight after that, it's like they were literally the width of a post away from an All-Ireland final last year. You know, and I was talking about Cork a few minutes ago and how close they were. Clare have been completely forgotten. Now, I know they had a weird trip to almost get into the All-Ireland final last year, but they're far from an irrelevance. And I think it's interesting that they literally weren't even mentioned there. It's like four teams are at play in Munster.
And as we all know, there are a lot of factors that come into victory in the GAA. You know, skill, fitness, strength, all these things. But one that trumps all of them is being forgotten about.
Oh, without
if you're
doubt.
Forgotten about, you immediately have a 500% better chance of winning something.
Well, I tell you, Mark, now, this is no word of a lie, and I don't know, you know, who I want to tell this, but I've got an appearance later on today on Clare FM on their sports show, and I'm beating this drum to death, because that's Clare FM is the best chance I have of getting this message across that Clare have been written off, because it's, to be honest, as a Clare patriot, it's my duty to make sure that they know that there's something to put up on that dressing room wall come Sunday in Welsh Park.
Is it true? Now, I read an article in, I can't remember what paper it was, but one of the Sunday papers, that nobody in Clare has mowed the lawn this year yet, because they just want as much long grass as possible for them to hide it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely true. Like, you know, that's the kind of human interest feature that you'll only get in Ireland's most read newspaper.
So at least when we get the victory speech by John Conlon in August and he says they all wrote us off, he'll actually be telling the truth for once, that they were actually written off.
Mark, well, look, they have been written off. Like, you know, that's a fact. I heard Tommy Walsh today never talked about Waterford and Clare for 20 minutes without mentioning Clare once. Like, you know, so it's a fact.
Right, there's more going on in the world than just Clare, Mark.
Yes, I've taken a look at some of the...
notes here. Yeah. I don't see anything else.
Actually, I do have Clare in this as well, so don't worry. I thought I'd take a look at some of the coverage that we're seeing in the build-up to this week's championship. There are so many games, so many stories, so many things to whet the appetite. And I'm just going to delve into a few of them here. So here are some of the key headlines.
Rubbing my hands together here.
Headlines that have emerged across the country this week. So Laois are hoping to win the Joe McDonagh Cup, lads.
They are.
Yep, that's the news. right. The hopes and ambitions are to win your matches and get to the final. Simple as that, says Eddie Brennan, who was interviewed this week on RTE. Then speaking of Clare, in the football, Waterford are taking on Clare this weekend as well in the football championship.
Doubleheader.
Benji
Not
Whelan,
really.
Great name. I think he was one of the Starks, first of his name, Benji Whelan. He's the Waterford manager. And Waterford are actually also targeting victory in this game as well.
Are they? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're after. First of all, that first win, says Benji. Yep.
Because targeting defeat not really a recipe for success.
No,
for
I haven't seen any articles on any manager that's doing that. Actually, speaking of wins, in the Christy Ring opener between Kildare and Roscommon, Kildare hurling manager David Herity understands the importance of winning this game. So Kildare hurling manager David Herity is also targeting a win against in their Christy Ring opener. He says, it's extremely important that we get off to a win in the opener against Roscommon. No excuses. The lads are flying at the moment and hopefully the guys can bring that form into the match. Yeah. So they're also targeting a win. Yeah.
Targeting a good start is what I saw. Yeah. David Herity, he went for a slightly different angle in a different article that I read, actually.
It's a good start to the... Not to just... No, he meant a good start in terms of making sure to win this match. You need to win two or three matches to get through the group.
Okay, so he was looking beyond this weekend. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Now, of course, you can target wins, but targeting wins comes with one very important caveat. Do not take anything for granted. And I can tell you, if we move on now... Yeah, so lastly, in the Christy Ring, on that note, Wicklow manager Eamon Scanlon has been talking ahead of their match against Donegal, and they will not be taking anything for granted, Morris. He said... That Donegal are there and they're there on merit. It's in their own backyard and I get the feeling that this is going to be hard enough. And then lastly, in the Nicky Rackard Cup, Sligo, guess what Sligo will be doing?
I don't think they'll be taking anything for granted.
I think they're going to win.
They might win, but they won't be taking anything for granted. You're dead right, Mick. Dahi Hand, Sligo manager, was speaking about the Nicky Rackard Cup clash against Loud. He said, they're a very good outfit, some very good inside forwards. We know what's ahead of us. It's not going to be easy. Well, so lads, games that are going to be hard enough, games are going to be easy, and everybody's hoping to win. That's pretty much every single
games
match.
No games will be easy. Yeah.
In the
there's no easy games in intercounty hurling or football.
No, that's if you're reading if you want to know any thoughts of any of the matches ahead of this weekend, both teams are hoping to win, and neither will be taking anything for granted.
That's the kind of stunning insight you only get on Balls Out of E.
You don't only get on Balls Out of E. You get everywhere because previews are a load of shite.
Except this one.
I don't know about that.
Well, we might as well move on and talk about the Leinster Hurling Championship. It all kicks off with Dublin and Kilkenny this weekend. Cracker of a game.
I think both teams will want to win that match now.
But they won't be taking anything for granted.
I don't think Kilkenny will be taking anything for granted.
Except Brian Cody said their first task is to get out of Leinster. That's not even a joke. That is true.
I tell you though, Dublin could be waiting in the long grass. Yeah. I don't know, maybe they should cut the grass in Nolan Park before that match.
I think that's jumped the shark, right? Everybody's talking about Dublin finally coming this year. I think it's gone beyond that. That now it's like, if you were to listen to people, now Dublin have to win in All Ireland or they haven't achieved success this year. No. They've been so like.
But I think the reality, once it comes down to it, I think if Dublin can get out of Leinster, it's a huge achievement.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I think they have the capability, if not for the amount of players that they're missing, especially going into this weekend. So you look at like Keane O'Callaghan, Fionn McGibb, John McGrath. You've got Donald Burke, who is just coming back. Conal Keeney is just back from injury as well. Like I think that...
He's also like 36 at this stage. Like, you know, I still absolutely worth the space, but you just wonder how long... Before the wheels come off.
Liam Rush obviously is just back training. Shukley, I think, he's back fit, but there's a huge amount of everybody seems to be. Galway are decimated by injuries. Kilkenny, just today, Joey Holden has confirmed that his hamstring is going to rule him out. You've obviously, Owen Murphy is missing there as well.
Is it club month? Has it done them in?
Club ripped them off.
Yeah.
A lot of them, it feels like they haven't made it in time either. You know, it's maybe come a week
back,
or two too soon. For a lot. I'm not sure. Like Kilkenny, you would have to fancy the fact that like Dublin should have beat them last year. That's like an objective fact. They should have beaten
Chris Cumming got man of the match.
But it's going to be very different in Nolan Park, I think. And I think that's a really tough start for them. And if you think that Galway, you know, no offence to Carlo, and we could talk about that and we could talk about how close Carlo could get to them.
Yeah, no offence to Carlo. Galway can't take anything for granted in that match.
They can't, no. But the fact that they're at home to Carlo means they're going to get off the mark. Wexford have the rest week. You know, or Wexford have another week to get everybody ready. I just feel like the draw is working against Dublin a little bit.
But does the fact that...
You don't want to lose your first match.
If you think about
it... To borrow a Mark cliche.
Sorry, that's a David Herity. Didn't, you know, tired a good start.
If you think of a Kilkenny team without Owen Murphy, Killian Buckley at centre-back, Joey Holden at full-back, James Maher and Conor Delaney also injured, and Richie Hogan a major doubt.
Yeah. You're talking about, especially in Buckley and Murphy, two of their top performing players over the last 3 years.
So even given the, like, Dublin don't have as bad a hit as Kilkenny do, I think it's a huge opportunity on Saturday for Dublin.
Right.
You disagree?
I don't. I think they could absolutely do it. I you know, a point loss is still a loss, and I think that that's probably where it's, like, you know, I think that it could be a close game. I fancy Kilkenny to win. I don't think it's not a big chance for Dublin.
Mick got to speak for a couple minutes about Clare, so it's only fair that I get to talk about Galway. Galway, who are also decimated by injuries and are waiting in the long grass, and nobody should pay any heed to until they rock up in August with Joey Kenny making his return and winning All-Ireland. Carlo.
Can I talk about Galway for a second, though? Because I have a worry about Galway. And we've talked, I don't know if we talked about it on the show, we've talked about it in real life. Me and Morris are actually friends in real life as well. Like, well, in the office, like, you know. But
office friends.
Galway haven't, like, every team, you win All-Ireland, you have to bring in two or three. That's how you stay great. Everybody has a golden team. Everybody has a team that you can compete for a while. But you to stay at the top, you have to keep regenerating and regenerating and regenerating, and they haven't been doing it, and it's starting to worry me now that we're probably looking at the fourth year in a row with more or less the exact same team, and eventually that becomes a worry. Joe being injured, if they're good enough outside of Joe to get through Leinster, it might make them kind of try a few things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm not going all Niall Quinn here and saying Barcelona are better off without Messi or anything. But no, I don't. I think they'll.
What about
I think
Tottenham being better off without Harry Kane?
No, it's nonsense. But also, especially with Joe, I think Galway will hang on by a thread to get through. But what I mean is, in the long run, it might do them some good. Like, but I just worry that there isn't enough players coming into the team. Like, there's players coming through, but they just can't get into that.
Yeah, they
15.
Can't, yeah, they can't break in, and they've shown a lot of promise. You think back to, I think this time last year, we were all looking ahead to the Galway game and talking about Brian Kincannon and what he might do against Offaly, and he ended up getting man of the match and scoring 2 goals and never really kicked on after that game, to be honest.
Yeah.
He looked really good in the quarterfinal against Waterford. You'd be hoping for him. Guy like Sean Loftus, who, like, if, you know, they're going to pursue with Mannion in midfield, which I think it looks like they probably will, Loftus is a decent partner while you try and get David Burke and then back up to full fitness. It's a real shame that Finden Burke, who was under 21 captain last year, did his cruciate in the club final and they won't get to see him. I think he's a guy who would have had an instant impact, to be honest. I fully agree with you. Like, I mean, even the players that they did try and reinvigorate the squad with during the league, look at a guy like Tadhg Hearn. I mean, he was there in 2015, went back to it, played some really good hurling with Meadows, fully deserving to get a chance back again. But there's no kind of new face out of the blue that looks like a Shane O'Donnell, for example, that's just going to totally reinvigorate a squad that'll get that challenge back. I think that the Joe absence is an interesting one, because suddenly there's more pressure on trying to get Glenn and Cooney back into your team a lot quicker, and also on trying to get players to kind of assume more of a mantle. Like, if Joe is out, I think Conor Whelan potentially comes out and plays around the middle instead of being in the inside of the square, and they probably use Kincannon in that role. And Whelan starts to get more of a scoring opportunity as opposed to this incredibly hard worker that he kind of became at the end of last year. Loads of shifts that could go on within that is pretty interesting. Just before we move off that game, Carlo, we actually spoke to Richard Cody about this game already this year and about their kind of ambitions for the league. I think that the most important thing for Carlo, or for the championship, sorry, is that they're competitive. I mean, to the extent where Offaly totally fell away after 2 games, and that if, I think the schedule probably helps Carlo better for them to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to talk about what the spread is because we're going to get to that now in a couple of minutes for that game. But, you know, Carlo kind of almost getting well within inside that in maybe 3 of their 4 games is probably, you know, the best they have to hope for.
Yeah,
they'll think they can win a game, and rightly so. And I'm really, I'm glad they will. I hope they think that way. But, you know, from our point of view, is like, that's their first year. Their aim should be, you know, really run these teams close, give them a couple of scares, play to their best ability, and maybe go and try and win Joe McDonagh again next year then, and kind of come up and play at that level on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Lads, what about Wexford? I'm hearing no talk from any of you about Wexford. I'm seeing no talk about Wexford. Mm. Are Wexford in the long grass along with Clare? Or are they just...
There might be for
and
people...
Galway relevant. And Dublin.
There might be for people who don't listen to this podcast, but we actually had Rory O'Connor on this podcast quite recently.
Oh, I mean just today. Like, oh, haven't.
Yeah. That's because they're not playing this weekend, I think. But...
But in terms of the overall championship...
Yeah, like, I think... there's something in that. There is. Because, Wexford had a really weird league in that they looked like they were going to take it by a storm and then kind of didn't. And all of a sudden now I kind of have a nice gap coming into their first game. What do you think, Mick?
I was in the quarterfinal against Clare down in an empty Borca Cueve last year, and I was really, like, I was obviously happy that like my team beat them, but like I was really disappointed in their performance. It felt like a kind of a Wexford performance from 10 years ago, you know, where they're just not at that level. Now, it wasn't like, if you then, I read Davey's book since, you know, about like, and it does just seem like a lot went against them over the course of last summer. You know, it's like they started off well and things just kind of went from there, and
yeah,
it looks like there's a chance to fully reboot now and not kind of worry about the legacy of what happened last year.
They ended up with, like, whatever way the draw went, they had a really difficult run.
They had the four games in a row, yeah.
Yeah, that pushed to have again this year, don't they?
There's nobody has four games in a row now, but yeah, they'll have three.
But it's still, it's a harbour. Like, if, say, for example, if Dublin do manage to pull one off at the weekend, or even if they don't, so either you've got Dublin on the crest of a wave or Dublin fighting for their lives coming into that second game, that's still, either way you look at it, it's still a really tough game for Wexford in terms of getting off the mark there.
I suppose that, absolutely. I think the thing with Wexford that we always have to remember, they're just one of those teams, and it's annoying that it is like this, and they're just one of those teams that you don't know until you see them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wexford come out and beat Dublin by 10 points and suddenly we're talking about them as contenders, and there's a, like, a Davy Fitz team isn't going to stay massively under the radar for long, you know. But I think the fact that they are off this week is probably does them a favour, you know, because people aren't talking about them. You're dead right.
It's about those four keywords: commit, focus, believe, and you can achieve. Carlo have achieved after 33 years in the wilderness, and well done.
Right, before we go, the most important championship of all, some might say. Guess the handicaps. I'm back in the running this week.
You are.
Back competitive.
Mick's given up. He's thrown in the towel. Can't beat me.
Mark had me hiding last week, so I thought it was only fair to give Morris a shot, so I decided to take over. We're also going to reintroduce that the person doing this, who has a chance to look at the handicaps beforehand, is going to do our official accumulator of the week. And you guys can tear it apart when it's my turn this week. But and also, just for the week that's in it, because it's the first proper weekend proper of the Football and Hurling Championships, I've decided to do 7 instead of our usual 5. And that is to cover 1 from each competition. So we've got something from the Munster Hurling Championship, the Leinster Hurling Championship, the Joe McDonagh Cup, the Munster, Leinster, Ulster and Connacht Football Championships. So are we ready to go?
Yeah.
Morris, I'm going to start with you. The Munster Senior Hurling Championship, round 1. Welsh Park, Waterford. Welsh Park.
Against Clare.
Waterford versus Clare. What do you got?
Waterford at home are favourites, I'm going to say. And I'm going to say Waterford are favourites by, I'm going to say Waterford minus 1.
Mark?
Hi, Michael. Mark, won't be bet, can't be bet. Fairly here. Not calling for time at all. I really wanted to go Waterford minus 1, so now I'm just trying to come up with something else. I'm going to say that there is no spread.
Right, an interesting one. We're going with the usual rule of 2 points for an exact one, one point for closest.
Can you go with the same one? Like, there's so many here, can we go with the
no,
same one?
No, because if it's a draw going into the last one, then the person, or if you're by 1 going into the last one, then that person gets the unfair advantage.
100% Waterford minus 1.
It's Waterford minus 1. And so Morris goes up from 2 points, 2 points to nil. Mark, a slightly harder question for you, unfortunately, for your first one. The Leinster Senior Hurling Championship, Galway versus Carlo, Pearce Stadium, Salt Hill, Sunday.
Oh, I'm trying to remember, didn't they play in the last day of the league? And I couldn't get over how big the spread was. I'm going to say, and I think Carlo finished up well within it. I'm going to say Galway minus 12.
Hit me, Morris.
I think it's less.
I think it could be.
I'm going to say Galway minus 10 because the amount of injuries Galway have that we just spoke about, because Carlo building for this all year, as Cody said, I'm wrong. I can see it with Mick's face.
I just should say that you should probably both have a look at Carlo, because it's Galway minus 16.
Wow.
Oh.
And you're both way off, but Mark gets the point.
Yeah, I remember this exact thing happened in the league where I couldn't believe
how. Do you know what, though? Sorry.
That was it. And they covered that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, you forget kind of like 16 points sounds ridiculous. It sounds like an absolute hammer out the gate. I was doing this, trying to figure it out when I was doing the accumulator, and I just put down a score. Just a random score that this game could easily be. And I went, geez, it'd be well under 16. And it was 17 points in the difference. Now, it was like, what, it was a 226 to 112 or something like that. You know, you could easily see that game be with Galway hitting, you know, 8 points in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, just with in a broken down game where their fitness just proves too much and stuff like that. It's easy enough to get up to that, like, you know.
Like, say, Limerick bet them by 16 points last year, after week after they played the Joe McDonagh final. So you're asking a Carlow team that drew with Galway in the league already this year, like, is that Carlow team who did what they did in Sawtill already this year, who are targeting this championship, who have a full bill of health,
yeah,
a Galway team who now don't have Canning, question marks over Glenn and Cooney. I hope you're right.
I tend to agree with you. I'm just putting the other side of it. Right, Morris, you're winning 2-1. We go to the famous Joe McDonagh Cup. It's in Tullamore on Saturday night. It's Offaly versus Laois, the two biggest rivals in the Midlands.
So this is a really interesting game. Offaly just gone down. Laois, we spoke to Eddie Brennan last week about trying to target Joe McDonagh.
What was Eddie Brennan saying about this match?
Hopes and ambitions are to win our matches and get to the final. Right. Simple as that.
So that might give you some sort of heads up here.
I think there's either no spread or it's a point either side. Okay, I'm going to say Offaly minus one.
Christ's sake, this isn't fair. Like, he keeps setting me. I'm going to go Offaly minus two.
Offaly minus one. It's 4-1 lead for Morris.
4-1 lead because he's getting the... Morris, what's two?
Do you know what? I have to be honest. I didn't look at the order of this properly. But anyway, that's another issue for another day. Mark, we'll move on to football. It's more your forte anyway. And you've plenty of chance to get back into the game. We'll start with the Munster Senior Football Championship. Thurles Saturday night, Tipperary versus Limerick.
Tipperary versus Limerick. Limerick had a good end to the league, despite the fact that they were asked out of the worst team in the country, and then they promptly won three matches in a row.
As soon as we declared them as that, that was it for Limerick.
That was a big boost to the
whole setup. Put it up at the dressing room door.
Yeah. But Tipperary won't be taken out for granted in this game, but they are targeting a win. I've got to say Tip minus... See, football points are usually too low. It could be... I would, if it was a betting man... Oh.
Come on, you are a betting man. You literally have to pick a number here.
Tip minus five.
I'm going to say it's bigger. I'm going to say Tip minus eight.
It's Tip minus... 10.
Is it?
Yeah, so Tip minus 10, huge number there.
That's too big.
Mark, probably is too big, but you lose, and it's 5-1
tomorrow. I've just wrapped up here, have I?
Well, there's three more to go, okay, so yeah. Anything could happen here, and none of them are as straightforward as the ones before, that's all I'll say, right? Morris, your turn here. Meath versus Offaly, Leinster Football Championship.
Okay, Meath just after winning a league... John Mohan in with Offaly. I'm going to say Mead are favourites and it's minus four.
Oh, it's Mead minus seven.
Is it? He's made a competition of it. It's Mead minus seven. We're up to 5-3 and Mark has the honour.
Yes.
Okay. Ulster Senior Football Championship. Honestly, the first thing I think of when I think of a kid and the first... I think of this as the 8-9 match in Ulster always, yeah. Is Tyrone and Derry beating the tar out of each other in their change kits.
Yep.
Tyrone wearing the all-white and Derry wearing the red with the white hoop. And they feckin' hate each other, these two teams. But what's going to happen? One of them was in the All-Ireland final last year. The other one was in Division 4.
Exactly. And this is another one that could like end up being... I think the spread's going to be too low on it. This is what's putting me off, because Tyrone are probably going to hammer them, but the spread mightn't reflect that. I'm going to say Tyrone minus... thinking in my head nine, but maybe that's too big. I'm going to say Tyrone minus... No, Tyrone... Yeah, Tyrone minus eight.
He got there in the end, lads. Just have to hurry this up a little bit here now. We're on the clock.
Given... okay, I'm going to say Tyrone minus seven.
Oh, he's wrapped it up. It's Tyrone minus seven. It's 7-3. Just for funsies, we'll go to the Connacht Championship because we can't leave it out. Roscommon versus Leitrim Morris. It's in the Hyde. One of the nominated for the best pitch in Ireland. I'm shocked we've got this far in the podcast without saying it, considering they couldn't open the bloody place last year, two years ago. Yeah.
Leitrim, clean bill of health. I've served a great league. I think only Damian Mullen, their captain, is the only player who's there's a doubt over. I'll say Roscommon minus 6.
Marco?
Roscommon minus 7.
It's Roscommon minus 7, yeah.
So Morris won this on two joke ones.
Morris won
the world in its mother.
Morris won at 7-5. Yes, in fairness, there was a direct hit on 5 of the 7, which I think has to be commended. So congratulations,
lads.
In many ways, both of you are winners. Yeah, but another more accurate way, Morris is the winner.
You could bring a shepherd from Tibet in and he'd say that those two hurdle matches were going to be minus 1.
Well, the shepherd from Tibet could be a good gambler. You wouldn't know.
Look, Mark, you came in, you targeted a loss, you took me for granted, and you got your comeuppance.
Come on, can I do this accumulator? Yeah. Just to give you the other spreads of the weekend's matches, right? Cork and Tip. What would you say quickly, just as a Cork at home?
Cork minus 2.
No, you should have Cork minus 1. Kilkenny in Dublin is Kilkenny minus 3. Clare are minus 9 against Waterford at home in the football. And in the Leinster Championship then, we've got Kildare minus 9 against Wicklow. That's in a neutral venue in Carlow. And Wexford are plus 2 at home to Loud. Loud, the favourites there. I have gone, lads, right? And bear with me here. I could be mad. Joe McDonagh Cup. I like Offaly to beat Laois, and I think if they beat them, they'll beat them by more than a point. I think that when it comes down to it, I just think Offaly will still kind of just have that kind of higher level experience that I just think that they'll manage to get through. That's my Offaly minus 1. In the Leinster Championship, I fancy Meath to win by more than 7 against Offaly. I think that Mead could like just get a bit of a run together going, you know, up to the Leinster final this year and get a little bit of momentum under their belts. They're due it, and the league form would suggest that they have that in them, the fact that it's at home as well. And then I'm going for Louth minus 2 away to Wexford, which I'm a little bit worried about, the fact that it's away from home. But Louth showed really, really good form this year, and Wexford just seemed to, Mark, you commented on it a number of times about how Wexford football just seems to have fallen apart, really. Like. So,
And also, what's his first name? I can't remember his first name. Michael, is it? Kearns, the Louth manager. I was reading...
Wayne
Kearns.
I think you were thinking of Michael Kiernan, who used to play rugby for Ireland.
I was reading this week that he's looking forward to the match. There's not a preview.
Morris, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm on board, I think, actually. I've got a question mark over whether or not Meath can do it by minus 7, but
7 is a big spread now. Yeah. So when I said it out loud, I felt very unconfident about it, actually, for that one. But sure, we'll stick with it anyway.
I've got a rifle one here, just made up going by your things there, which was Wicklow to beat the handicap against Kildare.
Right.
Tyrone to beat the handicap against Derry, and Galway to beat Carlow to beat the handicap against Galway.
We'll keep a running tally on all of them and we'll maybe talk them up at the end of the year. We're out of time, lads, take it easy.